Kia ora, my name's Gareth.
And I'm Roger.
And welcome to Out on the Streets, Pride and Place, a four-part podcast series exploring how we create rainbow walk tours from dreaming and planning to walking and reflecting.
So this is the fourth and final part of the podcast. So what have we covered in the last three episodes? We've looked at the whys and the wherefores of walk tours, why they're so fulfilling. We've stepped through the history of Walk Tours NZ, and we've begun to start the process of creating a new tour. Then we looked at researching and writing and identifying our stops and ways of handling tricky topics. And then last episode, we looked at the promotion and marketing of walk tours, managing registrations, and enhancing the tour with things like visual flipbooks and audio clips.
And in this final episode, we're going to be looking at what happens actually on the day of the walk tour, how to manage participants, and then we'll reflect on some of the really exciting outcomes that we've experienced through running walk tours over the last 7 or 8 years.
First, though, we've got a question from Kath, and Kath asks, I'm overwhelmed by the amount of information. How do I distill it down into key points?
And I think Kath's talking about when you do that original research into either a topic or a person, and you're bringing in all of these different pieces of information, potentially biographies, podcasts, etc. How do you find those kind of five elements?
Well, it can be overwhelming, but fortunately, there is help in the form of AI. And one of the things that I've used really successfully is an AI application called Notebook LM. And that allows you to upload a whole bunch of textual information about any topic, really. And then it can pull that together in the form of summaries. So it can distill pages and pages and pages of information down to a paragraph or two, if that's how much you want. So it can create timelines, it can create bullet points, it can do mind maps, which help identify themes. So it can be a really, really useful tool. But again, as always with AI, it's always a case of once you've got the output from AI, just making sure that you fact check it.
And Notebook LM isn't the only application that will do this, although it's very good, but there are also things like Claude, ChatGPT, Gemini, a whole range of different kind of language models that will allow you to summarize content very, very quickly, and will give you maybe not the finished product, but actually it's a great starting point in terms of if you've got so much information that you just need to work out what does it all mean. We've also had a comment from Kim, and Kim wrote in saying that we forgot to mention the perfume. And what Kim is referring to is when we were talking about things that we do on tours. So, for instance, we have little audio snippets, we have flip books. On some tours, we also use perfume, and in a particular tour, so we on Carmen's tour, we spray Elizabeth Taylor's White Diamonds perfume, and it really does conjure up a time and a place. It was a favorite of Chrissy Witoku, and Chrissy was a contemporary of Carmen's, and it really does conjure up an earlier time and a place for people. So think about audio, think about flipbooks, think about handouts. Also think about, are there smells that you can recreate?
Yeah, all that sort of sensory stimulation thing can be incredibly powerful for conjuring up memories and giving a real sense of history to whatever it is you're wanting to talk about. So we've arrived at the day of the walk. One of the things that we do at home is to practice and do a practice run of the speaking stops. This is on the morning before the tour. We do that before every tour. Because we only do them once a month, there's a chance that we might have forgotten what we said. Or some of the tours we only do two or three times a year. So it helps us remember what is in the tour. It also gives us a chance to warm up our voices And with that, something that I'm struggling to do now, but I must remember to do, is to smile when I speak. Because when I smile when I speak, it makes me sound like a much warmer and more approachable as a person. It just helps to warm up the voice and the mood and the atmosphere and the energy a little bit too with speaking. And so it's much easier to hear that than somebody who's scowling or sounding really stern and whatever.
So I think, on the morning we would run the entire talk, so that's around about 40 minutes of talk, well before we actually do the walk tour in the afternoon. It's a great warm-up exercise. Also, before the walk tour on that same day, if you get a chance to do a bit of a recce and look at some of the stops to make sure that there aren't any kind of roadworks going on or there aren't other festivals going on that you may need to detour. So don't be afraid. If you need to make a detour on the route, just do it, because actually it's better to kind of detour than kind of barge through someone else's festival.
And remember that the mood of the tour starts from when you're welcoming people as they arrive. And it's really important to welcome people when they arrive, even if, in fact, they're not there for the tour. And we've had people that we have welcomed who have not been there for the tour, but have just been passing through. We have even had a couple of occasions when people have joined our tour because it sounds like a good thing. They weren't intending to do it, but they were there and thought, why not?
How do people know we are the tour?
Good question. We try and be at the location of the tour at least 10 minutes before it starts, because people are often there early and you want to be there before they start arriving. And we open our flip books to a page with a large rainbow and the words walk tour. And you could also use a flag or something just to show that you're there.
It's really important to really try and engage with everyone as they come forward and make them feel welcome. Make them feel welcome, but also I think people really appreciate sticking to start and end times. So if you mean to start at 1 o'clock, start at 1 o'clock. There'll always be a number of people that will come a little bit later, but that's okay. But always start on time and hopefully always end on time. People really appreciate that.
Usually there's a bit of housekeeping to do at the beginning of the walk tour, so you'll be at the first stop for a few minutes anyway after the notional start time of the walk tour. So gather people around in a semicircle, introduce yourselves and give a short overview of the tour, how long it's going to be and where it will end.
It's a really nice thing to invite members of the group to introduce themselves and say where they're from, so people can start making connections immediately. And when we say introduce themselves, it's like say your first name and where you're from today. And it just gives people an idea, and it gives us the idea of actually how do we need to pitch some of the information. So are there international visitors? Are they all locals? What have you. So it's a great way of finding out actually who's with us today. We don't ask them why they're on the tour. It's more about just saying, hi, I'm Gareth and I'm from Wellington.
And at the beginning too, it's a good idea to go over any health and safety concerns. So one of the key things for us is to cross at the lights together. Very important to make sure that we all get through the walk tour alive. Make sure that we don't block the path so that other pedestrians have got a chance to get through while we're giving our talk. And also always watching out for traffic.
It's good to cover what will happen at the various stops in terms of how people stand. We often say, look, just form a semicircle around the hosts and we'll talk from that point. And what we'll be talking about will be behind the hosts. So people can look at the site that we're talking about and we will talk to them. And then it's kind of off we go to our first stop.
Now, it's a really good idea to take into account the speed of your walkers and to adjust your speed. Keep the group together as you walk, particularly when crossing the roads, and make sure that you don't leave people behind, so that if only half of your group gets across the road, wait until the next cycle of lights and everyone can catch up then.
I think also if the group splits up, it's really important for the first part of the group to stop and wait for the rest of the group. Otherwise, you get this kind of divided group, which is it's not easy to manage.
One of the things that I do at the beginning of every walk tour is count up how many people we have and just keep a running check on how many people we still have throughout the tour. And almost always it's the same number at the beginning as at the end.
Which is great.
Yay.
It's always useful also, I think, to signpost how long the next bit of walking is going to be. So telling the group, oh, this is a 5 minutes walk. Also good to note how far through the tour we are. So, you know, we've got two more stops before the end or we're halfway through. It just gives people an idea of where you're at and so they can manage their own energy levels.
So when you reach your next stop, bring people into a semicircle and don't be scared to adjust your positioning so that you're not talking into the wind or make sure that you can remove yourself from traffic noise if need be.
Also, don't be scared to switch up your presentation depending on the audience. So, for instance, you may need to give more context if you have international visitors. People actually don't know what's in your script, and so you can always drop things or reorder them.
Invite questions and comments and be prepared to accept corrections. We've had a number of corrections during our walk tours from people who have actually been in the places that we've talked about that no longer exist or have met some of the individuals that we talk about that are no longer around and have been able to speak with some authority on what actually happened or where something actually was. And so always be up for that and be prepared to learn as much as you can from your walkers, because often we find that walkers know a lot about some of the things that we didn't know about.
I think the key for us is that we're all learners, that we're doing this as part of a community experience, and we're learning at the same time. So I really think, you know, keeping it on a level playing field so we're not the experts imparting information, that actually we're learning this together. So questions, comments, and corrections are all fantastic, but we also need to keep to time. And so the experience for everyone should be relaxed and natural, but actually for the hosts, it is also a controlled experience. And so we need to get to the end stop at the right time.
And above all, we all need to enjoy it too. So that's a key thing too.
Absolutely. I mean, if we're not having fun, well, certainly if the hosts aren't having fun, the audience won't be having fun.
Yeah. Okay. So now at the end of the tour, remember to thank people for having taken the tour. It's actually been a privilege to have the walker's ear for 90 minutes, and so it's important to say that to them. Without them, there is no tour. So thanks to them, as well as thanks to us for having achieved what we've done. It's a great opportunity too at the end to promote future tours. So if you've got another one coming up in the next month or the next week or whenever, then you can mention that. But also it's an opportunity to talk about the survey if you have a survey developed to get feedback for your walk tour.
We've got a basic survey through the website SurveyMonkey, and this is the free version, so you can only ask a certain amount of questions. But we've got questions like, have people attended a tour before? How did they find out about the tour? Is it the right time of day, the right day of the week? And why they attended? And in terms of why they attended, there's quite a number of reasons, actually, to be honest. Just looking at the survey here, it's like a lot of people attend to find out about local rainbow history, which is, you'd think, well, that's the obvious one. But then there's quite a number of people there that are wanting just to meet other people, to get to know Wellington a bit better, and to support family, friends, and colleagues. So there's a whole variety of reasons why people attend. And again, it comes back to that thing we were saying in one of the early episodes of you just never know who is in the audience, and you never know why they're there.
And another thing that we get through the surveys is comments from some of the walkers. One of them was from a walker who said, "By sharing Wellington's rainbow heritage with an increasingly diverse audience, you sustain the vibrance of our shared space. I feel energized and deeply grateful for your work."
Another comment was, "It was amazing. It was well-paced and very informative, as well as sensitive when it was needed. A fantastic walking tour is 50% content and 50% delivery. Gareth and Rog gave a masterclass. They were fun and had great energy."
And another one said, They are brilliant tours, and I look forward to attending more. They are important, valuable, interesting, and entertaining. Next time, I'll bring friends, which is exactly what we want to hear.
Amazing. And it's that kind of wonderful short comment where it says, you know, you're going to not only get a repeat visitor, but they're also going to bring people that they respect as well. And so that says to me that they've had a joyous, informative time, and that just is wonderful.
So what have been some of the positive outcomes for you for the walk tours?
Good question. Well, over 7 or 8 years, we've had some amazing experiences and very unexpected outcomes. I think probably the largest unexpected outcome was on one of our first walk tours, we had somebody from Heritage New Zealand, and that was one of the kernels for Heritage New Zealand developing what is now known as the Rainbow List.
And so the Rainbow List is a list of sites which are of specific interest and relevance to the rainbow community throughout New Zealand. Often they are in heritage spaces or heritage buildings, although they're not necessarily. But it's amazing to think that there is this now national list, a national list of sites that are related to the rainbow community and rainbow history in New Zealand. And as far as I know, this is the first national rainbow heritage list in the world. I know there are some cities that have heritage lists, but I think New Zealand is the only one that has a national, which is amazing.
Amazing.
A national list.
Amazing. Yeah. Another really wonderful thing for us was we've had a number of people from overseas planning their travel to Wellington based on our walk tour dates. So we put the walk tour dates up, you know, 3 or 4 months in advance, and people have actually said to us they are in Wellington on this day because of this tour. And it's like, that's
which
so
is
great.
Amazing. It's amazing, really. Yeah. Another thing that we've developed and we've been able to develop from our walk tours are virtual walk tour events. So sit down walk tours, so that people don't necessarily need to go on a walk tour. They can participate in a walk tour without moving. And this sort of came out of COVID, really, when we did some virtual walk tours. But we've been invited to do a number of presentations in front of groups of people, which are virtual walk tours developed from the physical walk tours. So that's great.
But they have quite a different energy because obviously you're not walking around the city, but they are still really exciting, and it's just really neat to be able to reuse the material that we've generated for the walk tours in other contexts, and to give people potentially with mobility issues the opportunity of interacting with those tours is really fantastic. And of course we've had sign language tours as well. We've had sign language interpreters on our tours a number of times, and that's again really increased the accessibility of the content.
We've had a number of people who've been on our walk tours want to start up their own tours, maybe in their own cities or centres around New Zealand, and they've been in contact with us about how to do it, and that's really what's inspired this podcast series. And that's great that other people are so inspired by the fact that there's a walk tour in Wellington that they can do something in their own city is fantastic.
I think one of the biggest positive outcomes for both of us is that we have learnt so much from the walkers, whether it's new stories about historic figures or whether it's just different views on different aspects of the tours. I mean, just interacting with a whole lot of different people has been so uplifting.
And that's just one of the many things that I'm quite proud of as far as the walk tours go. Another thing is really surfacing and paying tribute to our rainbow heritage and keeping some of those memories and stories alive. You know, I think we both feel that that's really important.
I'm really proud of that the walk tours They cross a whole range of different communities in Wellington and wider. And so we're not just talking about one kind of niche community. It seems to attract a whole lot of people for a whole lot of different reasons. And that diversity of ages, of demographics, is just really wonderful.
And I think also for me, there's something really special and joyful about doing something for free. Doing something fun and for free and sharing that with other people is great.
I think the kind of mindfulness of the walk tour is really interesting as well. The idea that you, rather than walking through a city, which, you know, we kind of do on a daily basis, we're actually stopping and looking and looking at things that maybe aren't there anymore, but actually there are resonances there, and it might just be a door, or it might just be an empty space at the time, but you can actually bring that to life through a photograph and a story. So that kind of mindfulness of stopping and just paying attention is really cool.
That really wonderful reminder that history is all around us all the time.
And that, I think, is a really lovely place to stop this. Not stop, because we're not stopping. It's but pausing this conversation, pausing this podcast series, and saying thank you so much for listening over the last four episodes. And also thank you to everyone that has taken part on the 100-plus tours that we've run in Wellington over the last 8 years. It really means a huge amount to us. And we hope that you have gotten something out of it as well.
So really it remains just for us to wish you all the very best for creating your walk tours, and don't forget to invite us, because we'd love to come along.
Thanks again. Ka kite.
Ka kite.